How did American intelligence respond to terrorism, a major war, and the most sweeping technological revolution in the last 500 years? Why did NSA begin the controversial terrorist surveillance program that included the acquisition of domestic phone records? General Michael Hayden is the only person ever to helm both CIA and NSA. He offers an insider's look at America's intelligence wars in his new book, Playing to the Edge, American Intelligence in the Age of Terror. For 10 years, he participated in every major event in American national security, the fallout and consequences of which are still unfolding today. And it's a great pleasure to welcome General Hayden to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for the invitation, Joe. Thank you.
Very nice to have you aboard. Given the two positions that you held that have such secrecy attached to them, what was it like for you to write a book about your experiences? Because it must be freeing in some sense to talk and to give us a little bit of a sense of what you go through in those positions.
No, you're exactly right. And actually, you've hit upon one of the core reasons that I wrote the book. American intelligence, I think, is essential not just to our safety, but to our liberty. It's also not well understood. And we are now at a time in our history, Joe, and frankly in the transformation of our political culture, that things secret are automatically things suspicious. And so I wanted, to the best of my ability, the metaphor I use is to take my countrymen, walk them up to the vault door, punch in the cipher lock, take them inside, and introduce them to the people and the processes who do these kinds of things on their behalf. And to the degree I can do that by law and make our countrymen more aware of the reality, I am quite happy to accept the verdict of our countrymen about the future of this profession and this institution.
There obviously is great debate now as to where we are in the gathering of intelligence. And this debate has, and you point out in the book, this has been something that we've been trying to get a grasp on for a very, very long time, right?
Yeah.
So what is it about now that you think people are especially concerned about? Is it because of emerging technologies?
You've got a witch's brew of change, and actually an element in the brew is the pace of all change. So undoubtedly, Joe, you've got the rapid technological advance. But beyond that, there's a cultural shift, too. You know, one of the controversial programs you've already suggested is the metadata program, the phone records program, as you accurately described it, phone records, not phone calls. NSA felt they were in a pretty good place with that. The president authorized it, actually two presidents. The courts knew about it and oversaw it. Congress was aware. Heck, the strongest supporters in the Congress of the program were the intelligence committees. But once it became public, there was a great popular outrage. And Joe, I try to point this out in the book, that a lot of good Americans, and I'm not talking about the fringe here, a lot of centerline Americans said that what you just said, Hayden, the courts, the Congress, the president, no longer constitutes consent of the governed. Maybe consent of the governors. You may have told them, but you didn't tell me. And Joe, that's the fulcrum that we're balancing on right now. How do I tell the American people enough to make them comfortable about what we're doing, to get validity and validation from them, but not so much that it makes it not worth doing in the first place? And that's where we are, and that's why I wrote the book.
Do you think, you talked about this shift in our culture and how we think about such things, do you think that most people have a trust or are lacking a trust in the government and what they are collecting and what they are able to collect?
Yeah, so right now I think we're in a perfect storm of government distrust as represented by both parties' primaries right now. Right? And this is part of that larger swirl. I actually think some of the things you and I are talking about would not have been as much big news had it not been happening inside this perfect storm. But you know, Joe, even when the weather's calm, so to speak, I used to say when I was at NSA only needs two things to do its job. It needs to be powerful, and it needs to be secretive. And we exist inside a political culture that just trusts, frankly, only two things, power and secrecy. And so this is going to be neuralgic. This happens all the time. And generally, as you suggested, we've done this balancing act for two-plus centuries. We do the balancing act well when we have a common body of data that we're looking at, when we all have a more or less vision of what reality is. And I fear, number one, because of some political cultural changes on the outside, but also because of some obsessive secrecy on the inside, we don't have that common body of information to look at, and so we're coming to vastly different conclusions.
That idea of safety and keeping us safe, is that something that we even know what that means anymore?
Well, you're asking at core a policy and politics question, right? What is the level of safety that the American people have a right to demand their government provide them? And John, you're going to the core of the book here, but I try to enrich it in the book with specific anecdotes. What are you really talking about here? I gave a talk several years ago at the University of Michigan, and I held my right arm out in the air and said, this is everything our government's doing for you now. It's going to stop all those big attacks. Don't worry about them. But those little attacks, you know, the self-motivated, the drive-by, the guy trying to go to the New York subway, some of them are going to get through. They're going to get through. And then I turned to the audience, okay, on a fairly liberal campus, and I said, so what do you want me to do with my arm? How much more of your commerce, your privacy, and your convenience do you want me to squeeze for a marginal increase in your safety? And then before they answered it, I said, as an intelligence professional, that's not my question. That's yours. As a citizen, however, Mike Hayden thinks that arm is about where it ought to be, even though I know, Joe, that some bad things are going to happen because we refuse to do some additional steps. I'm sorry, this is a long answer, but it's really important. After the Boston Marathon bombing, there are a lot of complaints. Something bad had happened. Complaining usually follows. Well, for God's sake, these Tsarnaev kids were surfing the web and going to jihadist websites. How come you didn't know? And my response to that is, well, let me get this right, fellow citizen. You want your national security agency tracking the web activity of American citizens and permanent legal residents? Is that the plan? And, of course, when I put it that way, it's, no, step back. So you see the issue, Joe. I mean, we could do more, but even folks like me sometimes don't want to do more because we actually share these values, too.
Well, I congratulate you, sir. You made the debate last night. good for you.
Thank your
recent remarks that the military would flat out refuse to follow illegal orders of Donald Trump. Do you clarify that a little bit?
Sure.
What do you think the problem is?
So, Mr. Trump, as candidate, has said a lot of things. You know, we'll close our country to one of the world's great monotheisms for a while until we figure it out. He said we'll do more than waterboarding, a lot more than waterboarding. We'll torture because they deserve it. And, Joe, read the book. As you know, there's a lot in there about waterboarding, and,
yes,
and there's a record of waterboarding, but we didn't do anything because they deserved it. We're not court. We're not punishment agents. We're intelligence. We did it looking forward, not backward. So Trump's wrong on that as well. But the one that really set me off was that he would attack terrorist families. He literally said, and we will kill their families too. And Bill Maher asked me, so what do you think? And I said, well, the American Armed Forces would not carry that out. That's an illegal order. You are not only not required to follow an illegal order, you are required not to follow an illegal order. And I would just express to you, Joe, that if a President Trump ever issued that order, I have pretty high confidence that when it ran into the first uniformed American man or woman, that man or woman would turn to whomever had given the order to them and simply say, that's just not going to happen.
And in the debate last night, it was brought to Donald Trump's attention that it is illegal, and the fact that torturing or killing a terrorist's family is illegal. And he said, they won't refuse. They're not going to refuse me. Believe me. And the moderator said, but they're illegal. And Trump brushed it off.
He brushed it off. Yeah, he did.
How concerned should we as citizens and as American citizens be in that type of ideology?
Well, I've actually got the dialogue in front of me, and after going back and forth with Brett Baer, he says, I'm a leader. I've always been a leader. I've never had any problem leading people, and if I say it, they're going to do it. That's what leadership is all about. My fear, Joe, and I've said this publicly before, and you know, I'm not comfortable commenting on political things, but you asked, if a President Trump would attempt to govern in ways consistent with the language of candidate Trump, I would be very concerned about the safety of the Republic.
You've had a long, distinguished career. Have you ever had a situation where you have questioned that leadership and questioned it to this extent of what they're asking us to do is not legal?
I've never experienced that. The people I've worked for have had very strong moral compasses. I actually tell a story in the book, Joe, where when I was at CIA, we were asked to do something that both me and my deputy thought long and hard about. We requested a private audience with the president. The president gave us all the time we wanted. And frankly, when I left that room, it was my considered judgment that the guidance from the president was simply, and if you guys are good with this, do it. And if you guys are not good with this, we will not speak of this matter again. So hearing what I heard last night is very inconsistent with my life experience in the American government.
At the end of the book, when you talk about being in the private sector, this is at the time you had been out for 3 or 4 years when the whole Edward Snowden affair became public. Given the situation that we're in now, given some time has passed, what do you make of that? What have we learned? And do you think we have come to any conclusion in this matter?
Well, a couple of thoughts. Number one, I give some credit in the book to Mr. Snowden for accelerating a necessary national conversation. I also make the comment that he badly distorted that conversation, but he did indeed accelerate it. But that was a fraction of the information that he put out there. The other 98% to 99% of the things he made public has nothing to do with your privacy or mine, Joe. It has everything to do with how the United States collects legitimate foreign intelligence. So my overall statement is that this is the greatest hemorrhaging of legitimate American secrets in the history of the Republic. And now, if you really want to use an additional barometer, Joe, how much has changed since the Snowden revelations? We got one law, the USA Freedom Act, that said that the phone companies will keep the metadata, but NSA can still access it. So that's not that dramatic a change. The president has said we're not going to listen in on a couple of dozen foreign leaders, until we decide we want to again. And, Joe, I'm pretty much done telling you all the changes that have taken place since the quote-unquote Snowden revelations. It's pretty much been steady as you go.
So my question being is, have we seen this to a conclusion? Do you think there will be more, or are you pretty positive that we've seen as much as we're going to see?
There are a couple of exotic issues out there, Joe, that your listeners are probably blessedly unaware of. There's going to be a debate coming up on something called Section 702, which is a really big deal about how America collects foreign intelligence. And we'll probably see a debate on something called Executive Order 12333, which is the president's guidance to the intelligence community in terms of collecting intelligence. So no, it's not over. We will re-engage. But Joe, to be very candid, the events of the last 18 months, San Bernardino, beheadings, chaos in the Middle East, murder in Paris, all of that has made people a lot more supportive of things being done to keep them safe.
Well, the name of the book is Playing to the Edge, American Intelligence in the Age of Terror. Michael Hayden is former director of the National Security Agency and the CIA. The book is published by Penguin Press. General Hayden, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much. A great honor to speak with you.
And an honor for me to be able to chat with you and your listeners, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.